So the last discussion that we had here on Daf Pei Dalet Amud Aleph was about Midras Kli Cheres Tahar, and in the case where a Zav leans or sleeps or rests and pushes his weight down on a Kli Cheres on earthenware, it does not contract, it does not convey Tumah. And we got up to Debei Rabbi Yishmael, which is approximately five lines up before the end of the Amud, and they derived that Kli Cheres is not Matami B'Medras from the following source, that it says, by Tumas Zava, Kol Mishkav, Asher Tishkav, Olav Kol Yimei Zava, Kimishkav, Nidasa, Yela, V'chol Kli Asher Teshev, Olav Tamei, Yeh, Kitumasa, Kitumas Nidasa. And this pasuk sets up an equation, a makish mishkava la, the mishkav of the zava tahara herself, she herself. Mahi isla tahara b'mikvah, just like a zava herself can purify herself in a mikvah. Af mishkava nami, so to the mishkav that she sleeps on, which became tameh, can also be removed through Tara B'mikvah, the Islay Tara B'mikvah, Lafuki, this excludes Kli Cheres She'ena, it's not subject to Tumas Medrash, because Leslay Tahara B'mikvah. In other words, Tanit Be'er Yishmael did not want to derive Kli Cheres Tar in Tumas Medrash from the Pasuk that says Gabi Zav. He wanted to learn it from Zava. And Zava is not Chayevus B'tfila B'mayim Chayim El Tavelus B'mikvah. And you cannot ask the kasha that Tosis raised before, that there's a difference between Taras Zav and Taras Mishkova. Now, our sugya establishes that this din, that Kli Cheres, it doesn't become a medrash, is derived from a pasuk. Rashi elsewhere writes that Einam Nasim Medrash Mishum She'einam Re'uyim LiYeshiva. In other words, a Kli Cheres by its very metzius, its very nature, is not something that you want to sit on because they'll break easily. They're very fragile. And it would seem that according to Rashi, we don't really need a limud to exclude Kli Cheres from Medrash. We really have a simple svara that you don't put your weight, your body weight on top of a Kli Cheres. That's too iffy. And perhaps our sugya wants to have a limud to be metar Kli Cheres in a case where Kli Cheres is very strong and it's not asuyim li shaver. And even so, it's not makabel tumas medrash. Masiv Rav Ila, the Gemara wants to deal with this halacha now of Kli Cheres einu menaseis medrash. We have a braisa that says mapots b'meis minayin. So we're talking about a machtzelis, a mat, konim, it's made of reeds, and asuyim l'shchiva, it's dedicated for sleeping. It doesn't have a base kibul, and therefore, since it's a reed, it is a kliyetz, but it's not just a kliyetz, not just wood, but it's pshute kliyetz, it doesn't have a receptacle. Now, how do we know that if a mess comes in contact with this mapots, with this machtzelis, that the machtzelis is susceptible and receives tumah? And the suffix here is because since pshute kliyetz are tahorim in a case of a sheretz, how do we know that this mapots, which is royal shchiva, becomes tameh through maga b'mes? Why is it any different than kli eitz without a kli kibul that did not contract tumah through negias sheretz? Why is negias mes different? And here we'll turn to daf pei dalid amid beis v'dinu. This we have to learn from a kal v'chomer. Ma pachim ketanim shetahorim bizav tmeim b'mes. In the case of small pachim, little vessels that are made of cheres, and the opening, the peh, is very narrow. You can't even put a finger inside of it. It's tahorim bizav. That's not something that's royal medrash. So therefore it doesn't become tome with maga, because you can't really touch the inside of this pach. It's so small. And it's not nitva behesed, right, in a major situation, but nevertheless, tmei and biol ames is mapot shetomei b'medrus hazov eno din sheetomei biol ames. So how much more so in the case of a mapot, which can contract tuma of a zav, a medrus of zav, and that's because it's royal shechiva, is certainly it should contract tuma if it's in an olames. So here's Rabbi Yehuda's kasha. Amai, why is a mapot nitma b'medrus azov halesli tara b'mikva? Just like we excluded kli cheres from midras because it's not subject to tara b'mikva, the equation to nida, is here in the case of mapots, it doesn't lend itself to tara b'mikva. And therefore, for sure, it should not contract tuma of medrus, which the Brisa here assumes that it would be contracted, it's subject to tumas medrus. Now, why is there no tvila b'mikvah in the case of mapots, which is, again, it's royal at Tumas Medrash, but the question of Rav Eloy is that we have a condition in Tumas Medrash that it has to be subject to Tara B'Mikvah, and this is not subject to Tara B'Mikvah. And the reason for this is because a mikvah is metayer only kelim that are enumerated in the parash of Shrotzim and in the parash of Midjan, of Melchemes Midjan. And that's where you'll find Tara B'Mikvah. Other materials, other objects, like Pshutei Kliyetz, are not mentioned there. They don't have Tara B'Mikvah. It's similar to what we find in Ochlin and Mashkin. They don't have Tara B'Mikvah because they're not mentioned in those Psukim. And here also, in this case of Mapots, which is Pshutei Kliyetz, that's not mentioned in the Parasha of Tuma, and therefore it's not in the Parasha of Mikvah, and therefore it's not subject to Mikvah. Omalei Rabbi Chanina l'Ravi Loi, Shani Hossam, the din of Mapots, which is made of a reed of eights, is different than the din of Kli Cheres. Even though Kli Cheres and Mapots are both excluded from Tara B'Mikvah, nevertheless a Mapots, as opposed to a Kli Cheres, is Nitma B'Midras. Why? Hol v'ika b'mino. Now, what is this svar here, Ika b'mino? Yesh b'mino shel mapots kelim sheyesh lem tara b'mikvah. For example, if you had a kliyetz that had a base kibul, it would be subject to tara b'mikvah. And therefore, even the mapots, the mat, which doesn't have, clearly it doesn't have a base kibul, it's not excluded from tumas medrash. Through all those, you know, derivations that excluded tumas medrash in the case of kelim that don't have tara b'mikvah. So kli cheres is ein b'minam kelim shenitan l'tara b'mikvah. Therefore, they're excluded. The kli cheres are excluded from tumas medrash. But in the case of a mapa, it's yesh b'minam tara b'mikvah. In the case of a kliyetz that has a base kibul. Amalei, Rabbi Yehuda responds to Rabbi Chanina, Rachmano litzlan mehai daita. God should save us from such a svara. You want to be metame medris, anything that's b'mino nitar b'mikvah? Well, isn't it poshut that an amapot itself is not nitar b'mikvah, and therefore it shouldn't be nitma b'medris? And Rabbi Chanina responds to Rabbi Eloi in tune, Adarabba, Rachmano litzlo mi daito didoch. God should spare us from your understanding. V'taima mai. What is the logic of Rabbi Chanina, who says that if it's yesh b'mino, nitbar b'mikvah, then it could be tome, even though it itself it's not subject to a tara b'mikvah, this mapot, but b'mino, it would be subject to tara b'mikvah. This din that you need nitar b'tfila, nitar b'mikvah, is derived from zav. And therefore, it certainly is Yose yesh lo duno kizav, shura atzmo yesh lo tara b'tfilo. So my answer is trei kroy k'sivi. Rabbi Chanina is based on a drasha from two psukim. Both these psukim appear in the parasha of Medrash Hazav in Vayikra Tezvav. Is one pasuk says k'siv ve'ish asher yiga b'mishkovo. The end of the pasuk says yichaveis begodov ve'rochatz b'mayim v'tomir erev. And we have a hekesh in this pasuk between Tumas Medrash and Tumas Gufo, because b'mishkovo, that's Tumas Gufo. And that's what we saw back on Daf Pei Daladom and Aleph, that this hekesh is from one word itself, because it says mishkavo, mishkav and shalo. But now we have a second pasuk, uksiv, in that same context. The Torah says, v'chol ha-mishkav asher yishkav alav azov yitma. And then it says, v'chol kli asher yishkav alav yitma. Now this pasuk doesn't have a hekesh between the mishkav and the zav and gufo shel zav. Each one is mentioned separately. And therefore, nitzach l'rabo sadina mishkav b'loshev kol ha-mishkav. Ha-ketzad. How do we reconcile these two psukim? One pasuk indicates that Mishkav Azav is equated to Gufo, and from that Hekesh we could derive that a Kli is not a Medrash unless it subjects itself or lends itself to Tarab and Mikvah like Gufo Shel Zav. The other Pasuk seems to indicate that we don't have a Hekesh between Mishkav Azav and Gufo, and therefore Kli, even if it's not Nitar and Mikvah, it's Royal Midrash. We have no choice but to say that it all depends on yesh b'mino or ein b'mino. And a kli is yesh b'mino. It has within the min of that kli, it has nitar b'mikvah. It's let's derive from the pasuk called mishkav that the pasuk is differentiating between the din of a mishkav and the din of zav mamish. The afal gav, the less lay tar b'mikvah, even though the mishkav doesn't lend itself to tara. But since b'mino it lends itself to tara, therefore, it's included in this Torah. And therefore, Mapots can become a Medrash because Yesh B'mino cleates Sheyesh Lem Tara B'mikvah, it has a Kli Kibul. However, Kli She'ein B'mino Chenitar B'mikvah, then we're going to derive it from the Pasuk B'mishkavo Makish Mishkavo Lo. And that's going to exclude a kli that doesn't have bimino, like a cheres, doesn't have bimino tevila b'mikvah. And then we're going to say that Medrash requires that it be similar to the Zav himself. He lends himself to be matar, purify himself in a mikvah. But a kli she'ein bimino kli acher shenita b'mikvah, like kli cheres, is ein adoma l'zav atzmo. And here we differentiate between the Mapot's case, which is yesh bimino, and the cheres case, which is ein bimino. The Gemara now offers another source to the halacha that we've been dealing with, that Kli Cheres is not Nitma B'tumas Medrash. Rava Omar, this din of Medrash Kli Cheres Tar, is derived Mehacha, from the Pasuk that's written in Tumas Kli Cheres B'ol HaMes, in Parshas Chukas. And there it says, V'chol Kli Pasuach, Asher Ein Tzomid Pasil Olav Tomehu, any Kli Cheres that is exposed, it's open, it's revealed, it doesn't have a covering which closes it, it's not dovuk, it doesn't have a mikseh dovuk, is subject to tumas olames. Ha, yesh tzomid pasul olav, tarhu. If this kli would have a kli cheres would have a very tight covering over it, then that tzomid, which is pasul of, would be matzil the kli cheres. Let's say, for example, there are ochlin inside this kli, and they are protected from kabbalas tuma in the case of olam mes by virtue of the fact that this kli is kli tzomid pasul of. It's absolutely sealed. So Rav is medayik from the lashon of the pasuk. There's no differentiation here between a kli cheres milo askinan di yachidinu leishto nida. Isn't this pasuk addressing a case where the metayer of a kli cheres in the case where it is designated for his wife to sit on, and she's a nida, so it's designated as a seat for his wife who's a nida. Subsequently, she sat on it while she was a nida. And for this pasuk, there's no differentiation between one vessel and another. It implies that any covered earthenware vessel, even one that a nida sat on, will be protected from tumas mess. The kamarach mona tar. And the reason it remains tar, this vessel, and I assume anything inside of this vessel, right, is because the outside surface is a chatzitza between the tumas mess and the inside of the kli. Now the fact that this seat, which is designated for a nida to sit on, becomes tummy with medrash, even if the vessel was not originally dedicated for sitting, it was dedicated forever to remain as a seat later on, then it acquires tumas midras. Now this halacha applies to something, an article which itself is tame, and therefore cannot serve as a chatzitza. So this kli cannot prevent tumas mess from entering, since it was rendered tame by a nida who was sitting upon it. Now, how can the outside of this vessel prevent tumas mess from entering into the vessel, unless we're going to say that a kli cheres cannot be rendered tame with medrash? So the nida does not actually be metame this kli, and the exterior of this kli is going to prevent tumas mess from entering. So we see clearly that a kli cheres is not subject to medrash tuma. And this leads us to the Mishnah here on the bottom of Pei Daled Amud Beis. This Mishnah is again going to derive a halacha from a pasuk, an asmachta in a pasuk, and here we're dealing with klay zroim, kelayim, which means you're not allowed to sew together different species of seeds. The Mishnah is going to talk about how this Isur addresses the case of vegetables that are planted together in a small garden. Minayin la'aruga shehi shishal shisha tfachim shezorim b'tocha chamisha zir'onim. From whence do we derive the conclusion that an aruga, some sort of patch in a garden of yirokos, which is 6 by 6 tfachim, that there's a way of planting in it 5 different minim of zaronim. And this is not called kelayim. And the case is, he was zorea 4 different mini zaronim. And when we talk about zironim, we're talking about seeds. So he has 5 different types of 4 different types of seeds. Al abaruchos arugon, the 4 sides of the, let's say, the 4 corners, if you will, of this patch of garden. Here he has a little picture of it. And achas, the 5th seed, is be'emtza. If you'll see in the diagram, he puts the 5th seed in the middle of this this square patch. And how do we know that in this case it's mutter? And the Mishnah says, "Shenemar ki chaaretz totzi tzimcha ukeganot zeruela tatzmiach." Pasuk in Yeshaya Novi. Zara lo ne'amar, ela zeru eha, in plural. So we're talking about many seeds. And the Gemara is now going to try to explain how this plural form of the seeds gives us 5 zeronim, and it's going to be within an area of shisha tfach. Now, let's offer a little bit of background. When a person is zorea 4 minim in 4 ruchos, on the boundaries of this patch. And Rak Keren HaZoveh Shebeinehem Nishara Pnuya. We have some sort of a Keren Zovis, which is left without seeds. And yet he planted four different types of seeds in the four Ruchos on the bounds of this Aruga. Is Afshe Yonkim Shnei Minim Zemi Zeh? There's no question that there's going to be some sort of element of crossbreeding, so to speak, meaning of yinika, of nourishment from one min to the other, because a yinika is usually a tefach umechza for each min. Is kedeshlo tisarif a yinika, he should require harchok of shlosha tfachim, and yet ain't lachshosh. Why? Shalot pida Torah el al kilayim tahainu irbuf ukshenikar she'eno meuravim. Ein Iser Bazeh. And this is based on a Sugyan Baba Basra, as far as Klai HaKerem is concerned, which is an Iser Doraisa, that you're allowed to be Zorea close to the Goder on one side of the fence, Chita, the other side, Geffen, because the Goder plays the role of making a differentiation that's clear to the eye. And we're not being Choshesh from the fact that they mix up their Yanika underneath the fence. And if that applies to Klai HaKerem, that's awesome in a Torah, how much more so to Klai Zeroyim, which is only an Issur Derabbanan, as we'll see soon. So this Harchaka, in a way that it's Nika, that the Zeroyim are being separated one from the other, even though there's Yanika one from the other, that's enough to be mattered. And we'll find later on Daf Pei Hei that there's something called Rosh Tor Ushtei Shoros, and each one has a Heker. So again, since there's a Heker between the Zeroyim that are set up on the four boundaries of this garden, therefore, this row, which is, let's say, Zeruah Mimizrach Lemarov, one is going from east to west, the other is Tzofon Ledorom, from north to south. That's an unusual way of planting vegetables. And mixas shuros l'ruach zu mixasan l'ruach acheres. Some of the plants will grow in that direction, some in the other direction. Usually the standard practice would be zorines kulam li'osa ruach. It's all going to be planted from east to west, from north to south. When he makes this shinui in the directions of the Zriah, it becomes recognizable that he's doing this to make a heker between the minim, and therefore, since the Issur Kelayim only applies when there's no heker between the minim, here it wouldn't apply. Therefore, he's allowed to be Zorea, even though there's a relatively short distance between them, as long as it's an unusual form of planting, and it's nikar, with a gimel tfachim on each side, as we'll soon see. Now, when we get to the Zeraim Tzoi, this was number 5, the seed that's in the middle, and it's really close to the different seeds, is then we have to be marchik sholosh tfachim, which is the shear of Yanika, because there's no heker between them. If they were very close to each other, more than that shear of Shlosha Tfachim, then, I mean to say less than the shear of Shlosha Tfachim, let's say that way I think is better, then it's an Irbuv, and that would be Kalayim. So when it says here, Arba al Arba Ruchos Haruga, it means that he was Zorea four different types of seeds. One is Zera Bodudim be Arba Ruchos Haruga. Rashi rejects this possibility that Arba al Arba Ruchos Haruga means that he plants four Garine Zera Bodudim, as he calls them, on four Ruchos Haruga, without being Mamali the entire Shura. And he has here a diagram where he plants them separated from, without fulfilling the Shura, as opposed to the previous diagram, which is Rashi's Pshat, that there's a full row of planting of this Zera on all four boundaries. And Rashi rejects that second Pshat because then Rashi says, Nitan Lizra Tisha Garina Baruga Achas. You can actually plant nine of these seeds in one patch. Why? Because arba bi arba pinos haruga, four on the four corners, vi arba nosofim beemtza kol ruach. And why not put another four in the middle between the two ends? And then, of course, you have the garin in the middle, which jacks up your number to nine. And that's because each one has a merchak of three tfachim than the other. So why does it say arba al arba? That's why Rashi rejects that pshat. My mashma. So the Gemara says, how do we derive from the Torah that you're allowed to plant these five sarunim in the aruga that's six tfachim square? And the pasuk says, Ki ka'aretz totzi tzimcha. There are five lashonos of tzimuach zroim. Okay? This is all in the pasuk in Yeshaya, which is quoted in the Mishnah, but the Gemara is embellishing this by saying that there are five lashonos of tzimuach. There's totzi tzimcha, that's totzi, that's number one. There's tzimcha, which is number two. And then it says zeru eha, also in plural, and that gives me another two. So we have two plus two is four. And then tatzmiach is number five. So we see here a remez to five different types of zroim that you're allowed to plant. Again, we're not going to derive from this pasuk that it's an aruga of six tfachim. I mean, that the Gemara is going to have to clarify, but one thing is clear from these multitudes of tatzmiach and so forth, is that we're talking about five mini zroim. Now, at this point, we want to turn to Daf Peheim and Aleph. Kimlu l'Rabbanon, the Rabbanon were bekiyim in this area, they were experts. Shestam aruga, shezorba chamisha bina Yisroim, it needs to be an aruga that's six tfachim square, and then it won't be a violation of kelayim. And the reason for that is, dechamsha b'shisa lo yanki me'adodi. If you have five zroim, and they are planted in an aruga that's six tfachim square, they will not breed or be nourished one from the other. Eino yorek yonek hazeraim tzoyim hazroim sheba arba haruchos v'lohem yonkim imenu. There's no yonika that goes from the zeraim tzoy to the four, to the zroim on the four corners, and vice versa is also the case. And why is that? Lefi sheshir yonika zera he ad tefach umechza im Makom Hazera. So since you're allowing two Zroim on two sides of three Tfachim, that means the separation here is a Tefach Umechza, and the Shear of Harchaka between two Zroim means that we need a Shear of Unika Zera, and that's going to go up to a Tefach Umechza, up to the place where he put the Zera. So it comes out now that the shir achok between the zroim that are placed on the outside boundaries of this aruga and their relationship, that distance from the zera emtzoi, is kedeshal tisarev yinikas min echad bechavero. And for that we need shlosha tfachim, because each yinik is going to extend to 1.5 tfachim, and therefore they have to have a vaharchaka, a distance of 3 tfachim, otherwise there's going to be an overlap of yinik, and that would be kalayim. But we see clearly that the shear of an aruga of shishal shisha tfachim is derived from this presentation. In other words, the three tfachim from the middle zera to the one on this side or to the one on that side. And therefore, according to this cheshbin, is nita lizroach hamisha min Yisroel baruga shel shisha al shisha tfachim. The Gemara tries to clarify minolan daha de kimlu rabbanon milsi. Maybe the rabbanon are not such bikiyu. How do you know that we can rely on them and it's absolutely convincing and they have smicha, so to speak, and we'll rely on them in a din Torah to say that this is the shear of Yanika. And therefore he circumvents the violation of Kelayim. So the Gemara says that there's a smachta min haTorah, the Omer Rav Chiya bar Abba, Rav Yochanan, Maidech Siv, Posig in Dvarim, in Parshas Kedoshim, I believe it says, Lo sasig gvul reach asher govlu arishonim. Are we saying that gvul reach asher lo govlu arishonim is mutal hasig? There is a heter of hasogas gvul? Ella, you know, why does it say Gavlu Rishonim? And if it's low Gavlu Rishonim, then there's no Yisra HaSogas Kvul Ella, but rather, we have to take this pasuk a little bit out of context. And we have to reinterpret this Gavlu Rishonim. Gavlu, Gvul SheGavlu Rishonim, Lo Tasig. And the Gemara is going to explain this very soon. Who are these Rishonim that Gavlu are Rishonim? But that shear of Gavlu Mehen is the shear of Yenikas HaZera. And low tasik, you know, don't dip in, so to speak, and deplete and diminish his yanika, the yanika that he needs. Don't plant something right near the boundary between your field and his in such a way that the zera is going to nourish from the sodeh, the akhisha. Anyway, we learn from this that the Torah relied on the Chachamim and their Bekiyus. They know exactly what is the shear of Yanika. So Gemara asks, my Gavlu Rishonim, who are these Rishonim that Shegavlu Zos? And the Gemara is going to now have to go through Psukim in order to explain what this whole business of Rishonim, Govlu, Lo Govlu, like it's if the early ones marked out, they somehow, sort of set out a boundary and that establishes the boundaries for planting. Om Rav Yishmuel Bar Nachmeni, Om Rav Yonasan, Dichsiv, or some of the gives of my Dichsiv, Eile B'nei Seir Hachori Yoshve Haaretz. These are the sons of Seir, the Chori, inhabitants of the land. So why is it necessary to describe the sons of Seir, the Chori, as inhabitants of the land? Well, what is this Yoshve Haaretz? Altu Kuliyama Yoshve Rakia Ninu? Does everybody else inhabit the sky? Ela Barada Shayubikiyam Bi Yeshuva Shel Eretz. They were experts in how to occupy the land. Shayu Omrim Milo Konazeh Lazayas. That for an olive tree, you need Milo Kona, the rod's length. Milo Konazeh Ligfanim. And for grapevines, you need the rod's length. Below Konazela to Enim, a rod's length for figs. And Chori, why are they called Chori? Shemarichim Es Ha'aretz. They're able to determine which plant is suitable for the land, for growing in the land, by smelling the ground. The Chivi, and they were called Chivi, Omar Papa, Shahayu Hayutamim Es Ha'aretz. They would taste the ground, bechivya, like a snake. A chivya is a snake, and they would be able to determine what that ground is suited for which planting. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar, Chori, Shenasu b'nei Chorin, Minech Sehem. They were freed of their property. They were driven from the land by the Bnei Esav, the descendants of Esav, and they were freed, so to speak, from working the land. All right, we're going to stop here with Omar of Asi, and that's on Daf Pei Hei Omen Aleph. And I would say we're approximately maybe a little bit more than half. If you want to count up from the bottom of the Omid, it's approximately 10 lines up from the bottom of the Omid. Here on Daf Pei Hei Omid Aleph.